You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time with Eric Beckman. Eric Beckman is the founder of the Animation is Film Festival, starting this weekend in Los Angeles, California. The Animation is Film Festival seeks to promote the best that animation has to offer. We get to speak to Eric about the importance of animation, the purpose of his festival, and what makes animation such a unique medium for communicating stories. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. This sounds great. Animation is Film Festival is this weekend in Los Angeles?
That's correct. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right in Hollywood, Man's Chinese Theater. So it should be fun.
It sounds like a great opportunity and a really exciting festival. But the question I would have is why launch a new festival now? What is it about this one that sets it apart?
It's definitely a mission-driven festival. It's something that we've been kicking around for a while. Many moons ago, I started New York International Children's Film Festival, which is another mission-driven event. And that was really about helping redefine what children's film, meant, sort of something more thoughtful, provocative, meaningful in terms of filmmaking for young people at a time when, it was sort of the height of the indie film movement for adults, but there was sort of nothing comparable for young people. So, and then that festival, New York International Children's Film Festival, kind of became a de facto entry place for a lot of really amazing animation coming into the United States, just because there was a lack of a big animation festival in the U.S. the way they have lots of in Europe and Brazil and in Ottawa and Hiroshima and various other places. And so New York Children's premiered a lot of the early the Miyazaki films. All four of the Mamoru Hosoda films had their U.S. premiere there. From Girl Who Left Through Time right up through Boy and the Beast. Kirikou and the Sorceress from Michel Ocelot, as well as Azur and Asmar premiered at that event. Tom Moore's Secret of Kells had its U.S. premiere with Nykiff.
Oh, wow.
So, and on and on. And then so it was sort of quasi-running an animation festival anyway, sort of within the auspices of a children's festival, but there were a lot of really amazing films that were animated films for adults that obviously New York Children's couldn't screen. And so it always seemed a shame to me that I wanted to, present these films. And then, of course, G-Kids kind of grew as an offshoot of New York Children's and quickly shifted focus to being an animation distributor. G-Kids is a film distributor, indie film distributor based in New York. And then once we specialized in animation, we started handling a lot of adult-oriented animation as well as children's. And, are probably best known for handling the Hayao Miyazaki, Sotaka Hata, all the Studio Ghibli films. And then also having a good string of success getting Best Animated Feature Oscar nominations for our pictures. We have 9 of them to date and are still the only independent film distributor in the U.S. to get any for Best Animated Feature.
Wow.
So that's all sort of background. And I had just sort of wanted, this idea of really having a big animation festival, an important, quote-unquote, animation festival in the U.S., and what would that look like? And where would that be and what time of year and all that stuff was sort of, we began really looking at that maybe 3 years ago. And the idea was not to do a big sprawling festival where animators could come and meet other animators and, meet recruiters and learn about the latest software, because there's a lot of events like that that already exist, including a couple in LA. But the idea was rather to have something that would really be an advocate for animation as a cinematic art form on par with live action. Like, this is real. This isn't just something you throw to the kids. It's not just Saturday morning cartoons. This is, you can do anything with animation that in general people who, think, have unconstrained ideas about what animation can be used for, we wanted to support. And so the idea of doing this kind of event and doing it in LA, where film people, not animation people per se, but film people kind of live and breathe, and film fanatics, you know, and everyone, you know, this is Hollywood. And so the idea to have a big event here where if you kind of, you know, you saw Spirited Away maybe, or you heard when My Life as a Zucchini got an Oscar nomination, or you know, oh yeah, there was that film Persepolis. I have a sort of a notion of animation as this broader thing, but I haven't experienced it. I haven't been to Annecy. But now for 3 days, you can, you know, buy 8-9 tickets and just binge watch some of the best animation from around the world. We have 12 amazing films making premieres at the festival, many of which are in the Oscar race this year. You know, really the cream of the crop in terms of new unreleased animated films that people are going to be hearing about, you know, in the next 6, 12, 18 months. Most of the films have directors attending, so it's super exciting. And you just get to, you know, go to animationisfilm.com, look at the website, see what looks like fun to you, and, you know, see 3-4 films a day. That's what it's for. So that's sort of a long-winded answer. But basically, you know, there's a lot of reasons why now, sort of changing, changes in the business, changes in people's attitudes and things like that. I could talk more about it if it's interesting. Or we could talk about the movies.
Well, why don't we talk about the movies? Like, I noticed that there seems to be the spectrum of films is extremely diverse, not just in style, but from nationalities, from locations. You've got films like The Breadwinner and Big Bad Fox, Zombillennium, which is the greatest title I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And Fireworks. It's so broad. Why was that so important to you?
You know, first of all, it's this year's crop of films, and we didn't sit around saying, oh, we're going to make sure that we have, you know, 40% films for adults and, you know, 60% films for family audiences. We didn't have any of those considerations. The selection committee basically looked at every new animated feature, you know, that had been produced and that hadn't been released yet, and lots of works in progress, and just really picked the films that we felt were the most standout. Because animation, you know, is created in different countries by different creators. You know, the idea of independent is that you can make your own vision, and so it's really nice that that those visions are not homogenous and they're quite different. And I'm happy, really, really happy with the selection this year. I mean, we really, you know, every film that we invited, you know, enthusiastically accepted. As I said, mostly the directors wanted to come, so I'm really super, super grateful for how quickly people embraced the concept of the festival and wanted to be on board. But the, you know, the films themselves are just a huge, huge range. You know, you mentioned The Breadwinner, which is the third film from Cartoon Saloon, who were Oscar-nominated for Secret of Kells and Song of the Sea. It's a film directed by Nora Twomey, who was the co-director on Secret of Kells. Angelina Jolie is the executive producer on it. It's also G-Kid's first foray into production. You know, we're exec producers on it as well. And it's just like a really vibrant, exciting, powerful film about, you know, a young girl's experience growing up in Taliban Afghanistan, and her dad gets taken away. And then because women and sort of older girls, she's like 11 in the picture, you know, can't go outside without an adult male with them. You know, her family is like helpless. She can't get food at the market, can't go down to the water pump for water. And so she ends up cutting off her hair and pretending she's a boy, which is actually a common thing that happened and still happens in that part of the world. So she could go out and work, and she's trying to get her family back together and find her dad. And at the same time, she's to sort of, you know, initially to placate her little baby brother, starts telling him this story. So there's this parallel world, which is a fantasy world, something that Cartoon Saloon is really wonderfully known for, that sort of goes hand in hand with this sort of more realistic real world where the action is taking place. And these two worlds, you know, kind of ping-pong back and forth towards a really amazing conclusion. So just, a fabulous, fabulous film. That's one of many. You know, that's a Irish production and a Canadian, actually Irish-Canadian Luxembourg co-production. You know, and then we have a number of films from Japan being sort of a perennial a powerhouse in animation with a very well-developed industry and culture. We have a world premiere of Virus Tropical, a film from Colombia, Ecuador, which is, I think, based on this graphic novel by a female graphic novelist, Paula Paula, who herself was sort of influenced by Marianne Satrapi from Persepolis, the idea that you could tell your story, you know, in a sort of a do-it-yourself comic style, and then that was adapted into a film, and it's a really amazing kind of coming-of-age story that begins on the day the author, Paula Paula, is actually conceived.
Wow.
You're sort of with the parents while that act takes place, and it's got really sort of frank depictions of sexuality and you know, and body, and just what it's like being a young girl and then an older girl and then a young woman, you know, growing up in a family full of women. And it's just a really unique kind of story that I had never seen before in animation. I thought that was really, really amazing.
Hmm.
You mentioned Big Bad Fox. That's the second film from Benjamin Rene, who's Oscar nominated for Ernest and Celestine. And that's very, very much a children's targeted animation, but so smart and so wise and so funny and not even a little bit cynical. It's just a brilliant, brilliant filmmaker, Benjamin Rene, and he'll be at the festival. And that's about sort of a fox that's sort of a little bit too wimpy to be a real carnivore. He's really sort of struggling with being able to, like, scare, you know, smaller mammals and kill them and eat them. And so he keeps on trying to steal chickens, but is chased away. And so he gets the great idea to steal some eggs and then sort of sit on them until they hatch so that he can have some meat. And then so the chickens finally hatch, and he goes to eat them, but they look at him and go, "Mommy, mommy, mommy," and sort of cling onto his leg. And so he's, like, torn between his desire to eat and sort of his pride around being a carnivore, and it's really the first time he's ever felt love in the world, and so he also, I don't know, it's just the sweetest, most charming film ever. It's really, really lovely.
Just right there, you talked about three incredibly diverse titles, just to name a few, but is there something specifically you were looking for in a film, or was it just looking for quality filmmaking? Was there some sort of connection between them?
It's good movies. I mean, you know, you watch a movie and you say, "Wow, I really like that movie," and there could be lots and lots of reasons why you like a movie.
Sure.
And, you know, if there's any thread, that's the only thread that holds them together. I mean, you know, whatever, I have my sort of personal preferences for some kinds of filmmaking, but I just, you know, at the end of the day, I guess I favor films that feel like they have a reason to exist rather than whatever pure entertainment, or that, like, touch your heart or make you think differently about the world. But that's overthinking it. I mean, you sit in a room, you watch a movie, and afterwards you go, "Wow, that was great," or you go, "Eh."
Yeah.
There's not much more to it than that. Anyone who tries to overthink it, I think, is whatever, rock and roll criticism or something like that. Just shut up and listen. I mean, that's just like a tip of the iceberg. There's so many other kinds of films. I mean, I could really, you know, you should really just, if anyone's listening, go to animationisfilm.com. There's 18 different programs. Everything is playing once. You know, if you can get down to the festival, please come. It'd be great. We have a bunch of parties. We have a VR lounge that we're putting together with Google. It's absolutely free. It's going to run 12 to 6 p.m. Both Saturday and Sunday in the theater lobby. I'm going to have 4 VR stations set up, and anyone who wants can come and sign up and check out a bunch of animated VR. We have a bunch of, you know, North American premieres, U.S. premieres, a couple world premiere films. We have Tehran Taboo that made its world premiere at Cannes. It's a very provocative, thoughtful, interesting film. We have the new film, it's the first film from Studio Panic, which is directed by Hiromasa Yonobayashi, who is an animator on Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle and Ponyo, and then directed Secret World of Arrietty for Studio Ghibli, which was the largest grossing Studio Ghibli film in the U.S., and then directed When Marnie Was There, which is an Oscar nomination. And so this film is really kind of, you know, both a throwback to sort of the earlier sort of fantasy films of Hayao Miyazaki with amazing characters and fantasy worlds and transmogrification and, you know, worlds above the clouds and things like that. It's just a gorgeous, richly animated movie, but it also is sort of the first film from this new a studio that was formed by Yoshiaki Nishimura, who's a twice Academy Award nominated producer for when Marnie was there in the Tale of the Princess Kaguya, which is my favorite animated film of all time. And there's just so much excitement about this new studio, and the film Mary and the Witch's Flower, which we're making a premiere at the event with the directors there, is just, you know, so exciting to anyone who loves animation, Japanese animation, good filmmaking. It's a really, really amazing film. Millennium is a fun film. It's a CGI film from France that is a really great idea. The concept is there's these bunch of like zombies and vampires and ghouls, and the way they sort of live in plain sight is in this theme park called Zombillennium. And inspector goes to try and shut it down, and then gets turned into a zombie himself, and his daughter's trying to get him out. But it's a super exciting movie with really great characters, great music, and just a real fun animated film.
What are some of the things you think that make animation such a unique medium? I in reading some of the information on Tehran Taboo, one of the things that it says is that a film like this could not have been made if it was shot live action, but the animation somehow gives it some freedom. Why is that?
I mean, it could have been made live action, Tehran Taboo, but it would have been a really different movie and maybe less accessible, and maybe, the film is about, it made its world premiere at Cannes. It's made by an expat Iranian filmmaker who lives in Germany, and I think it was much easier for the film to be made in Germany, certainly, than it would have been to make it in Iran, although there are very bold and brave Iranian filmmakers working on live action. But the film is sort of about how these two different and seemingly contradictory worlds live side by side and intertwine, and one is sort of the, very conservative, patriarchal, theocracy that is Iran, ruled by imams, and the other is this sort of, side-by-side world of partying and drinking and drug-taking and sex and prostitution and corruption, and how these two worlds kind of coexist. And in some ways, and especially for women, the film features sort of this intertwining stories of these three loosely connected women, and their common thread is this, sort of young musician who gets to know all three of them, and their lives, like I said, intertwine, and they all have their different stories to tell. But part of it is to be free, to be emancipated, often means to break taboos, or sometimes you're sort of forced into situations that, go against these more traditional concepts. But it's a very provocative film in terms of, what's shown on screen and the subject matter. And I think if some of that stuff had been shown in live action, again, it would be a very different, sort of maybe more narrow film. And the animation gives you enough distance to say, okay, I'm just sort of living in this world. And it's also been kind of in a rotoscope, a very beautiful rotoscope style animation. So there was live action actors who acted out the roles, and they actually did pretty amazing performances. And so it's kind of, what world are we in? And so it is a fantasy world in that it's animated, but it's also sort of underpinned by a real life situation. So you definitely feel while you're watching the movie that this is all real on some level. There's little flights of fancy and whatnot, but at the core, these are real stories of real people. And so, I don't know, it's just a really creative, thoughtful, and just one of many, many, many things that you can do with animation. There's really, again, as the concept of the festival hopes to show, there's really no constraints to the kinds of stories, the images you can show, the audience range, the budget. I mean, you can make a film by yourself on your computer if you just have the time and the patience, for almost nothing. You'll get, a filmmaker like Nina Paley, who made Sita Sings the Blues, and her production budget was, food and rent for 4 years while she animated the film. Again, you walk into a museum or a gallery to look at paintings, And you don't expect to see the same type of painting over and over again. You expect to see every different kind of painting, from photorealism to complete abstraction and different kind of figurative things. And there's a huge, huge explosion of different types of creativity that can happen. And animation is exactly the same, except it also moves. Oh, and there's also sound and dialogue, potentially. And so, so in some ways, it's surprising that when people think of animation, they think in such narrow terms as they do, you know. It's to take nothing away from the amazing films that are created. I mean, we're doing films with Warner Brothers and Pixar and Disney at the festival this year. You know, many, many, many of my favorite animated films are, you know, are big studio films. You know, but if you look at the studio films, typically they're rated PG, typically they're computer animated, typically they're either comedies or have very, very strong comedic elements in certain types of characters. They're built to open on 3,500 or 4,000 screens with big marketing budgets and big production budgets. They're economic machines as much as they are creative machines, and those two always live side by side in filmmaking. You can't make a film, or it's very hard to make a film without some economic consideration. But these are, you know, not just driving box office and home video and television and all that sort of stuff, but are also, you know, important in terms of theme parks and you know, licensing and any, you know, and apparel and any of a number of things. And so, you know, they're ultimately very, very, very large corporate bets by, yes, creative people making the films, but making them for very large, vertically integrated, economically driven corporations. And it's really exciting to see what happens when the smaller groups of people or individual auteur filmmakers or pairs of filmmakers or creatives get together and really just do what they want from the heart and make something that they want to make. And so so for me, there's that huge range. And, you know, in live action, if a film opens up in L.A. and New York and is a critic darling and then, you know, plays a bunch of film festivals and, you know, goes on to a Netflix deal, that's a successful film for that filmmaker. You know, that's a film that they're very, very, very proud of. And but for some reason in animation, people really just sort of think, you know, is there a McDonald's tie-in? And, you know, it's just so again, it's helping redefine and sort of take the blinders off audiences, people in the live-action film business, about what animation can be, and encourage people, audiences, to see more different kinds of animation and get into it, and especially the people that say things like, oh, I don't like animation, and there's lots and lots who say that, and I just don't feel that they've really experienced what it can be, but maybe more importantly, encourage filmmakers to use animation as an art form, or if you're already an animator, to make, you know, make that film of your dream or tell the story that you really want to tell and not be afraid of going out there and really, you know, being grandiose in your thoughts and just making the project you want to make and doing something original.
Well, and as we start to wrap up here, I just ask one question based on what you're saying there is, you're talking about animation, people saying, well, I don't really like animation. Do you think that they often get overshadowed and its importance get overshadowed, especially come awards season? Is that something that you feel happens to a lot of really quality animated films?
And I try not to get too caught up in the whole awards thing. I mean, we've had a good run with the Academy, and you know, I'm really super, super grateful that so many different types of people have embraced these films that we decided to, you know, sort of lovingly dub into English sometimes and bring to America. But I think at the end of the day, people like good movies.
Mm.
And yes, there's a and not with everybody, with some people there's a knee-jerk reaction where, you know, you say, oh, wow, this is the documentary film. Oh, I can't wait to watch this. Or, oh, this is the, you know, foreign film, you know, from, you know, whatever, France or Chile or something. Oh, I can't wait to watch. I heard good things about that. I can't wait to watch this. Oh, this is an animated film. Let me give that to my son to watch. And so, and again, that's maybe a narrow, maybe that's a handful of people, and maybe that's an over, you know, maybe that's an exaggeration, but there is this tendency to sort of ghettoize animation.
Mm.
And then I know every year, even after G-Kids had like 5 or 6 or 7 nominations, it seems like every year we were getting one, people would still say, oh my God, you know, G-Kids crashed the Oscar race. You know, how could this be? How could these little films that no one's ever heard of get nominations? But if you look at live action pictures, I mean, no one's surprised that Jurassic World or Star Wars don't get Best Picture nominations. And also, you know, no one's surprised when a little film like Moonlight not only gets a nomination, but wins Best Picture.
Yeah.
So why would you think it's any different for animation? You know, why people like good movies, and people who make good movies and think about movies tend to also like good movies.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, it goes back to your earlier question of how do we select films, you know, for the film festival, how do we, you know, how does GKIDS select films for what we want to distribute? And we basically watch the movie, and if we like the movie, we say, yeah, we like that movie. We want to share what we like with this movie with other people. And that's all we do for a business. You know, that's all I did at New York Children's Film Festival. That's all I do with GKIDS, and that's what we're starting to do now with Animation as Film. You find movies that you really love. You think what you really find, ask yourself deeply, what do I really love about this film? What are the elements of this film that really excite me? How can I convey that excitement and passion I feel about this movie to other people in the words that I use to describe it, in the marketing and the images we choose and the trailers you cut and the ads? All that stuff is just a way of expressing to people who are hopefully listening, hey, this is a great film. You should check this out. I've been to a lot of really horrible film festivals. There's a lot of things that call themselves film festivals that shouldn't. There's a lot of festivals that don't seem to have a reason to exist. I'm not being immodest when I say this is a really exciting film festival. If you've never seen an animated film in your life, if you don't think you like animation, or if you love animation, you should go to animationisfilm.com, buy a whole bunch of tickets to a bunch of different things, come down, bring Visine, get a coffee, get a popcorn. It's hot outside. It's nice and air-conditioned inside. Popcorn is a whole grain food, so it's good for you. come meet and talk to the filmmakers. Hang out with us. There's a lot of parties. I'll be in the lobby of the TCL Chinese Six Theaters, you know, with a cocktail in hand. Come find me and say hi.
Oh, that sounds great. Honestly, it sounds like a really exciting festival.
Yeah, I hope people like it. Yeah, it should be good.
Well,
thanks so much.
Thank you. Animation and Film Fest is this weekend at, did you say Grauman's?
Well, people call it the Grauman or the Man's Chinese Theater.
Theater
on Hollywood and Highland, but it's technically the TCL Chinese Six Theaters right at Hollywood and Highland.
All right, great. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.